The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I am Chris Buskirk. He is Seth Leaps, and this is the Seth and Chris Show. Tell me more about Pat's Run coming up next month, right?
Yeah.
Next month. You're going to do it?
I'm doing it. I told Bill, Mr. Wonderful, if he signed up, I'd pay for his registration. Because he's all about the,
Bill only does the sprints.
I'm building on the sprint, and he has enough time to put it together.
Well,
no, he doesn't.
He needs about 8 seconds. He does like a four. Do you do a 40? What's your sprint? Oh, you go the full 100.
April 21.
Okay, so maybe you need he'll need 10, 12 seconds.
Yeah.
More time to get on the shoes than to actually
I know. That's what's so funny about it. And he goes to a track to do it. He leaves his home.
Yeah.
Walks to a track to
drives.
Do 100. Yeah. No, I think he walks.
Do you walk or do you drive to the track? Oh, sure. Okay. Okay, so here's the plan. For Pat's Run coming up April
21st.
21st, right. Bill, you'll just want to be doing, of course, your standard 100 yards. But here would be my recommendation. Do a 4.2-mile warm-up jog to get to the location where you want to do your 100-yard
Oh,
track.
Nice. There it is. This is why we keep Buskirk around. That's really smart.
Yeah, this is like Tetris. You just have to manipulate the pieces around until they fit.
Nicely done. So Bill Davidson will be running in the
So Seth, you're doing it?
I'm going to do it.
Have you done Pat's Run before?
If not.
4.2 miles. It's short.
Yeah.
Short.
Yeah.
Should I do it?
Yeah. We did the Camelbackery, huh?
What day of the week is the 21st?
Saturday.
Okay. So we're in the clear on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, might have to do it.
Yeah,
and you're saying there's a team?
Well, we'll talk about that off air. But yeah,
is it a relay?
No relays. No, just all kinds of fun.
I like it. I think that sounds fun. I haven't done a running race for. It's been a while.
Okay.
Let's just say that.
Evidently,
it's been a while. I think the last one I did maybe was the rock and roll. But I didn't do the full marathon that time. I did the half. I think maybe that was the last time. Maybe the last one I did was a triathlon. You've done some triathlons, yeah? Or no? You've done a number of marathons.
I've done a fair amount of long distance running. I've never done a triathlon though. Yeah.
You know, I've never run a full marathon.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've done the
halves.
You have
to dedicate, a part of your life to it, but it's fun.
Not that long, though, I don't think, right? I mean, I know people who say you can train for an Ironman triathlon in 6 months.
Not me.
You got to – there's a regimen. There is a regimen.
not this guy.
But I think – yeah. So, okay. All right. So Pat's Run, where is it?
Tempe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it end at the stadium?
It ends at
that's fun. That's the way the Rock and Roll Marathon is. It ends at the – or at least when I did it. It ends in the stadium. That is kind of fun. All right, I'm in.
All right,
cool. You convinced me.
All right, I'll send you the link.
Seth, I just got back from a quick trip. Saw some folks and had a really interesting conversation. That actually was what I used a conversation you and I had on the show as the starting point for it. You gave a talk to some high school students. What was it? 2 days ago? 3 days ago? Monday or Tuesday of this week?
Yeah.
And what was it, a young Republicans group or teenage Republicans group? Is that what it was?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. You were there, right?
Yeah, it was. So, go on. I'm listening to you.
Was it the football team?
There's a pony in here somewhere. We're waiting for the pony.
Well, you asked the question, why were they there?
Yeah.
What had...
they were Republicans.
Why were they Republicans?
High school students. Right.
Right. And I can't remember now all the answers that we had come up with, none of which were right, of
Correct.
Course. What were the answers that we
Oh,
came up
you
with?
Know, I like the idea of empowerment, individual rights, the Constitution, keeping Americans safe.
Yes, all of our all of our guesses as to why they were Republicans were ideas.
Right.
The answer was a person. Mm-hmm. The answer was Donald Trump. That's why these kids had gotten involved with the teenage Republicans at their high school. That's why they ultimately went out to hear you speak, took their lunch hour off and went to hear you speak. You never thought that would happen, did you? 5 years ago, did you think, I'll be talking to a group of high school students because of Donald Trump? Right. That was probably not
a sentence that anyone had ever uttered.
Right. But in fact, that's exactly what happened. Donald Trump inspired these kids to get involved and get interested in first and then to get involved in politics. And I was really struck, and this was the conversation I was having last night with some people. I was really struck that we were thinking, you know, what got them hooked on this? Ideas. No, the answer was a person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is striking. You know, there's an old saying in Hollywood, show, don't tell. Right. And there's an idea in classical political philosophy of statesmanship. Right. What does the statesman do? Well, he's the example. He leads in the sense of being an example and demonstrates to the people, the people of his city, in the way the Greeks would talk about it, his polity in a country, demonstrates the way you should live. It exemplifies certain virtues. But it is the person that is leading by example, right? I mean, you see this also in biblical religion. The idea of discipleship is a concept here where you're leading, and it really struck me, Seth, as I was having this conversation last night, because I've been thinking about this ever since you and I had this conversation on the air. I guess it must have been Tuesday. That how much people matter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we can talk about ideas and they are important. Mm-hmm. In fact, they are critical. But the people matter more.
This is a Prager point in a way too, isn't it? A distinction between the left and the right is they will always talk about the people with an idea, but they will have contempt for people, whereas conservatives actually try and do things for people.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it Ben Boychuk, who's on the show, regular friend of ours, he's the managing editor of American Greatness. He sent me an article earlier today. It's from a tech website. It was not political in any way, and basically, several people were being quoted in it as saying that within the next 10 years, they thought that the number of screens in people's lives would be dramatically reduced, basically asymptotically approaching zero. Everybody now, you know, you've got all kinds of screens in your life. You've got a smartphone, you've got an iPad, you've got a laptop, you've got a television or five televisions.
Right.
The average number of televisions per household in this country is something like 4.5.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's a big number. And then when you add up all the other screens, people have all these different screens in your life, and technology is getting to a point where the number of screens is going to, these people were predicting, is going to collapse. And I, of course, was thinking what that meant for the written word.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this, to me, in a certain way, was another way of expressing that dichotomy that we were talking about, between the difference between ideas talked about in the theoretical and those being demonstrated by a person. People are more, the average person is more engaged by seeing a person, right? Seeing a story lived out.
Of course. Right.
Right. And they may come back and backfill and read about ideas or learn about ideas, but it's always the person, or not always, but very often the person who is definitive in starting this process, who is the example, who is the teacher, who's the mentor, who's the guide, who's the hook.
For people.
And so I was thinking about this with regard to screens. I thought, well, what does that mean for the written word? Well, there's a dichotomy even today between, if somebody writes a really good op-ed, mm-hmm. right, how many people will read it?
Oh, in a published paper?
In a published paper.
How many people will read it? Fabulous question.
I can
5,000 at the extreme.
Yeah, I mean, right.
At the extreme.
Right. I mean, I can tell you, you know, the number for example, and I can tell you at American Greatness, I can tell you what it is for the Washington Post, because I've seen these numbers when I've had my stuff there, where they think it's good. I mean, you're talking about in venues that get a lot of traffic, they got a lot of eyeballs, an op-ed will get that does well 50 to 100,000 people will read it. Now think about how many people will watch a video that's 2 minutes on Facebook or on Twitter or on YouTube.
So I'm way off. When I said 5,000, I'm just
50,000 or 5,000 is probably average. I'm talking about one that's performing really, really well.
Okay. All right.
Right. Whereas video, and again, this goes to the point of this distinction between people and ideas. I think the video is the analog of the person, whereas the op-ed is the analog, or the written word is the analog of ideas. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to explore that. Let's do that.
After this, though?
Yeah.
You don't think we can cover it all in the next 20 seconds? All right, we'll do it after the break. I'm Chris Boskerick. He's Seth Leifson. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm going to write it down this time because I ask you everything every time we play this. What's the name of the song?
Mr. Tin Man or Tin Man by Miranda Lambert. Beautiful song.
Yeah. He doesn't know how lucky he is.
No, because he didn't have a heart, supposedly, right? That was, Yes, he had no heart. That's right. There's that great line in The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Just a great line. Hearts are imperfect organs. They've yet to make one that can't be broken.
Is that in the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah. Hearts are imperfect organs. They've yet to make one that can't be broken.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Seth, I want to go back to this idea we were talking about. This really just was so striking to me. The reason that, 50 or 60 young people, high school students, came out to see you ultimately was the reason they got involved in politics was because of another person, and that person was Donald Trump. Which I should have known better. I mean, I feel
should have too. Yeah,
right. I mean,
right.
Because people matter. Examples matter.
Right.
And how do we? I guess it's not an either or, right? There's the ideas, and then there's the example. There's the ideas, and then there's the people. There's showing and telling. It doesn't have to be one or the other. I mean, I guess you need somebody to be the example. You were showing me a quote in the break. You need somebody to be the example, and then you can come back and backfill with the ideas. I guess maybe that's what we learn here is that these young people, these high school students who were coming out to hear you speak, they were originally engaged and energized and became interested in politics because of the example of Donald Trump. God bless them.
Over 60% of the room was female, by the way. You should know. Additionally,
that's interesting too.
Yeah.
And then once you're engaged, right, then you want to come in and dig deeper.
Right.
Do you think that's fair?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
Do you think that's right?
Yes, I do. I do. The power of an idea, the power of a person, and the wedding of both is really perfect politics. A good idea with a good spokesperson, right, is perfect politics. So it's a really interesting point because I mean ideas are true regardless if they're true, regardless of whose mouth they come out of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the devil can quote scripture, doesn't mean scripture is not true, right?
Right.
But sometimes it takes the right person to communicate that idea, and I don't, I can't do the theological part of this. But you and I were saying we were overthinking it because if we would have put ourselves in those children or kids' shoes in the early 80s, more you than me just of where we were, but a natural answer, if someone asked you, why are you a Republican, a natural answer in the early 80s, a high school student would say, I love Ronald Reagan. Right?
Yeah, right. And this was actually a point that I was driving at last night in...
whose name was, to your point, nickname... The Great Communicator.
The Great Communicator.
Right.
Right. It made a difference on a generation of people who grew up. Right. Power matters. Examples matter. I guess I should say who's in power matters because they present an example that people can emulate, mm-hmm. and they become an entry point for people to get into into a world of ideas that may, otherwise may have been unknown or closed off to them.
Right.
And that is that's why political victory, you know, in a winning an election presents a huge opportunity, not just for policy, though that, of course, is hugely important, but also to influence a generation of people, not just young people, but older people, too, maybe who had forgotten things, who had thought it wasn't worth it, who thought those things were obscured or the fight wasn't worth having. Well, when you find somebody who is a great communicator, who is engaging or charismatic, which I think Donald Trump's detractors would agree he is, mm-hmm. Both engaging and charismatic. They would then go on to add a bunch of bad things. Yeah, but he is engaging and charismatic. Yeah, but. But that presents a huge opportunity to then to do something with that. And the discussion, I'm interested to see in your thought on this, the discussion went to the generational differences, right? I mean, there's a generation known as the Greatest Generation, which is the generation that fought World War II, basically. They gave, interestingly enough, maybe they were just simply exhausted by the exertion of World War II. These are basically the parents of the worst generation.
The lousy generation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Greatest Generation raised the worst generation. There's no doubt, and I'm not, this is not my idea. People have literally written entire books on this, but the baby boomer generation is the worst generation in this country. They have done their best to kick the foundations out from under all of us. And they, by the way, are largely parents, not exclusively, but largely parents of the generation that may be try and one-up them, which is the millennials. Mm-hmm. On either side of those, between those two generations, are our generation,
right.
Gen X,
right.
And then you have Gen Z, which comes after the millennials. And the discussion...
about this the other night.
It's funny how these things keep coming up just in my life, just within this week. Gen Z...
Yeah.
People are strangely optimistic about Generation Z, which is basically, what is it, maybe 20-ish or 22, maybe, and under. That these are kids who are growing up with all the things that we decry on this show and all the time and for good reason, but they're maybe a little smarter. They're not about a little savvier, in some ways a little more cynical about it. But I don't. I guess
definitely more cynical. We keep hearing that. Less trusting of the generations before them. Much
yes.
less trusting of institutions. Much less trusting of government. In some cases, for good reason. In some cases, for very good reason, but that we keep hearing that very
well.
Point.
When I'll tell you trusting. if you're a 15-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and somebody or a 14-year-old, and somebody comes along and says to you that that the kid in your class Herman is now no longer a boy, that Herman is a girl and
right.
wants to be called Sally Sue,
right?
You are at an age where that's just simply laughable. Because you have not been taught yet, indoctrinated.
See, that's what I'm wondering. Is it? That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering, is it laughable or is it acceptable? It would be
maybe both.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
See, this is what I'm wondering.
There's an element, though, where you just don't buy the hype. And this is why I think people are somewhat optimistic about Gen Z. Because they've heard all this, but they think it's absurd.
Right. So it is an idea that could only have been foisted on by two previous generations up.
Right. So they go to school and they hear all of the SJW social right. justice warrior
right.
talk.
Right.
They're it's being forced on them all the time.
Right.
But you know what happens? What kids often think about what they hear from their teachers in school? These people
a lot of malarkey. Right.
This mm-hmm. malarkey, was that the term
That's,
you were looking
exactly.
for?
Exactly.
Right.
That's why I had to say it a couple
and they
times.
Laugh.
Right.
And they laugh. And some of these ideas most of these ideas that are out there right now are laughable. And in a certain way, it takes a kid to laugh at them,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they haven't been taught, they haven't been socialized not to laugh at them.
Yeah, they haven't been taught to hate, so to speak, as the old song goes from South Pacific, right?
Sort of.
You have
yeah.
to be taught to hate. You have to be taught to learn.
Yeah, interesting. I'm interested to know what people's experience is on this, on you know what the difference between millennials and Generation Z, that next generation down. I'm strangely optimistic about that. And I mean, look, this is we don't know yet, right? It's in the offing. It's a story that's yet to be told. But I think there's signs. I think there's signs of hope. They're interested to know what you all think.
They're taught, I'm hoping that they will think less about race than previous generations.
That's. I want to talk about that.
602-508-0960. Sorry, we're jumping on each other there. Be right back.
I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leaps, and this is the Seth and Chris Show. I'm going to come back to the point we were making when we went to the break, Seth, about the younger generation, the generation that comes underneath the millennials, Generation Z. We actually should look up the definition, but basically think about people who are kind of 20-ish and younger. You asserted or hoped, allowed, I suppose, that they would be less interested in doing all the hand-wringing about race,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I heard somebody on television or in print say, you know what this country needs? A good conversation about race. Well, suffice it to say that you and I would be aboard my private 747 right now.
Right.
Because that's about how often we hear that expression. In other words, your point is, why are we talking about it? Just treat people like people and move on. Right. I mean, it's that simple. And I think we really are in many ways in a post-racial culture. You know, there's the younger people, especially. And but I don't mean 20 and under. I mean 60 or 70 and under. Just don't think about it that much, except for when people who are paid to rub your nose in it, what do we call them? The grievance grifters. Mm-hmm. When they're bringing it up in order to try and make some political point, to see some sort of high point in the politics or the culture for the sake of gaining political power. Anyway, I want to come back to all that, but I saw this, Seth, I was just reading something during the break. There's a USA Today is running a story called "Voters Vow to Elect a Congress That Stands Up to Trump," poll shows. This is at a time when the generic ballot, would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat, right, in the congressional election, is basically dead even, or maybe Republicans up one or two. Right. Depends on the poll you look at. There are one or two outliers on that. But basically, over the past kind of 60 or 90 days, it went from Democrats in the generic poll for Congress for this year, went Democrats were up any place between 12 and 18. And Republicans have closed that gap, brought it down to basically zero to plus one or plus two. It's been a huge move in the course of 2 or 3 months. It just struck me that USA Today, they don't like that storyline. So what do? They change the question. And so now the question is not who would you vote for, it's do you want a Congress that stands up to the president, right? The idea that these that a lot of these polls are in any way objective or scientific and that they aren't being cooked to me anymore is just, I find it the idea laughable.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because agenda journalism is the order of the day.
Yeah. Just call it journalism, but it is agenda journalism.
Yeah, well, it's not journalism anymore,
right?
It's just advocacy. It's political advocacy under the guise of journalism.
Right. Following that James Burnham thesis of the dialectic of the immediate, right? We were talking a little earlier, Chris, CNN's headline, some meltdown at Bush White House, example number one, the exit of Hope Hicks as communications director. Every story about Hope Hicks up until today by the mainstream media was negative. But now that she's leaving, of course, this is a meltdown.
Meltdown.
Right.
Right. Now they're
every story about Hope Hicks was about how unqualified she was, how she was, you know, it was a sinecure, on and on. Negative, pejorative story on top of negative, pejorative story. But now that she's going, the White House will be melting down. This is the dialectic of the immediate.
Seth, we talked about this maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. When the Nunes memo came out, and we saw the extent of the corruption inside the FBI, we saw that the FBI and the Department of Justice had lied not once but multiple times. They had lied in front of the FISA court in order to get a fraudulent warrant, a warrant based on fraud in order to spy on the Trump campaign. When that was all over everything, we said, here's two things that are going to happen. Number one is there's going to be a coordinated attempt by the mainstream media to try and get that off the front page. And that they were going to try and replay last spring and talk about White House, about how the White House is in disarray, et cetera, et cetera. That's why can't I pick lotto numbers like this? Because that is exactly what has happened. It's pushed these things off the front page. We're going to keep talking about it. Devin Nunes is still out there. The corruption in the FBI, the corruption in the DOJ, the attempt by Democrats and by the Department of Justice and by the FBI to rig the election is still real. It is still unacceptable, and it still requires criminal prosecution. Whether Hope Hicks is there or not, irrelevant. Irrelevant. What is relevant is the corruption of our law enforcement agencies. Big picture, bigger picture, the fact that they were using their police power in order to try and impact the winner of the presidential election. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. You ever get lost in the bumper music?
Uh-huh, a lot.
oh, that's right. Well, this is a live show. We're supposed to be talking now, not just listening to the bumper music, great as it is.
Yeah.
Seth, back to your point. Okay, this is what I wanted to come back to. Back to your point, you know, maybe some of these younger generations, millennials maybe not so much, but Generation Z, which we still have not done our jobs because apparently we don't have access to the Google machine to see where Generation Z starts. But again, just think kind of 20-ish and younger. You thought maybe they would not have this self-destructive obsession with race, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really sort of a hangover of the, again, of the baby boomers.
Yeah, right? You had to be
race,
taught to
60s,
think about
the 70s, right? People didn't think about it that much before, and then it just was this holdover. Right. You know, there was this sort
from,
of
racial blindness to racial consciousness when the natural default would be blindness.
The natural default, I think,
you
that's
have to
exactly
be taught
right.
to hate.
Yeah,
words.
I mean, think about Shakespeare's play Othello.
Right.
There
Othello.
Is it is. The references to race, Othello was black.
Right.
The more. But the references to race in there are more descriptive mm-hmm. than anything else. Right. At point being that in Elizabethan England, when Othello would have been really, I think, stood out quite a bit, nobody really was thinking about it that much. Certainly not in the terms that came to the fore as a result of some of the sort of mid and late 19th century race theory, courtesy of whom? People like Charles Darwin and his followers.
Right.
Anyway, point being is that the default position, I think, is for people really not to think about race, whereas the left is obsessed with it.
Right.
Everything is about grievance grifting based upon race or some sort of
race explains things.
They think race explains everything. They're as bad as John C. Calhoun on these things. Right. For them, everything emanates from race. And people, I think,
Joe Wilson,
younger people, Well, people are would like to go back to the default position. Just be Americans. Mm-hmm. Think about it in those terms. Or humans, right. Yeah, right. Humans first, but certainly we're American citizens. Those are the fraternal bonds that we have for people who live in this country. And you were saying, well, maybe the youngest generation alive right now. Maybe they are just not thinking about it. I think that
it's
maybe
that study that
they'd
was
have
done.
To be they'd have to be taught.
Right. It was that study that was done of high school students, first generation American high school students who came here from another country. They start high school. They think of themselves as American. They graduate. They think of themselves as hyphenated Americans.
Yeah.
It has to be
and
taught.
That is terrible.
It's a terrible thing.
I
this is my whole thing about creating aliens.
As opposed to creating citizens.
As opposed to creating citizens.
Yeah, right. And this is the point I wanted to drive at, Seth. When people are obsessed with race or some other sub-identity, it makes politics impossible.
Right, of course.
Right? Because everything becomes about this other indicia, about mm-hmm. this other indicator, a person's gender, a person's sexual orientation, a person's race. And you never actually get to true politics because everything is about dividing people more and more, finally, by straining, as you like to
and
say.
Selfishly, by the way.
And always selfishly, always as a means of trying to take power from somebody
it's
else.
It's a very solipsistic view of philosophy, right? You are the only thing that matters, hence my truth.
Hence my truth, not the truth,
right?
Not objective truth, my truth.
Right.
And it is about you getting one over on me or me getting one over on you or my group getting something over on your group or your group getting something over on my group. that is that's not politics. That's tribalism.
Right,
and
course.
That always and everywhere has led to violence. And
right.
that is something we simply cannot allow to happen here.
But there's an investment in this, right? We were talking
there's
earlier.
There's a huge investment in it.
There's a huge investment in division. There's a huge investment in the forces of decomposition.
Yes.
There's a huge investment in the constant or the permanent revolution that we're always in, right? This is what the left thrives on. If there's nothing to complain about, all of a sudden America can be great. Ah, you may say, we can't be great because of X, Y, and Z, and all these artificial things that are brought into the slipstream of American culture that should be meaningless.
And it's not only American culture, by the way. This is a sickness that extends throughout the West, throughout Western civilization, Western Europe, the Anglosphere more broadly. It exists in places like Australia, New Zealand as well. But this is a disease that is peculiar to the West. You do not see this in, for example, China. China, which is bellicose, is confident, and is growing. Right, that is a civilization that has a sense of itself in a way that Western civilization seems to have lost over the past few generations. I'm not saying two; it's taken a little while to get here, but we have seen this disease mature and metastasize over the past, I'm going to say, kind of two or three generations, to the point where it really is destructive. Seth, are you familiar with a book that came out last year called "The Strange Death of Europe"?
Not other than the fact that you mentioned it about a week ago for some reason.
I'm going to say it was a huge bestseller in Europe. Okay. The man who wrote it is a man by the name of Douglas Murray. He's written, I don't know, three or four other books. He is he's the director of the Henry Jackson Society in London, writes for the London Spectator frequently. Another one of these sort of super smart Brits. Right, he's in his 30s, but think about somebody like a Roger Scruton, mm-hmm. 30 years ago.
Okay.
Right, this is the trajectory Douglas Murray is on. This book that he wrote talks about the big issues that are confronting the West. These are what you call the forces of decomposition,
right.
The forces of civilizational suicide, the sorts of things that
preemptive cultural surrender,
the sorts of things that Donald Trump talked about in my favorite of his speeches, Warsaw.
Right.
We need to spend time on that book. If there was one book that came out last year that I would tell people to read after the book by Chris Buskirk and Seth Leibson,
yeah,
it would be Douglas Murray's book. It's very, very interesting. Well, maybe
can we get him on?
Possibly. He's in the States now. We may be able to get him.
Right.
He's great. It is a book that is extremely important. Again, if you want a book to read, if you want a book to give to someone, if you want to understand the crisis of the West that Donald Trump has talked about, he talked about in the Warsaw speech. We've played clips of that speech more than I think we've played clips of any other speech, because it is that good. It is in the pantheon of all-time great presidential speeches. But he understood the stakes.
Nice.
Understood the stakes for the United States and for Western civilization. Douglas Murray gets it in this book. Again, The Strange Death of Europe. Maybe we can spend a little bit of time on it. A little bit of time on it tomorrow. But we need to push back on these forces of decomposition, these forces that try and denude a civilization of its sense of who it is, who its people are, and where they have come from, and why they have a right to live as they want to live. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Well, isn't this interesting? You're not going to be hearing this on CNN. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. This is the Seth and Chris Show. FoxNews.com has a very interesting report. Devin Nunes says that the FBI may have violated criminal statutes in its FISA application to spy on Trump advisor Carter Page during the campaign. No kidding. No kidding. The F says here, Alex Pappas is the reporter here. He's been actually really good on this. I don't always pay attention to bylines, but sometimes when
you find out
these reporters just by happenstance, like you see their name a lot on certain things, and just after a while you notice. Part of it is intentional, though, because I want to see who's actually doing the reporting,
right?
Who's actually on a beat and sticking to it. Alex Pappas at Fox News has been one of those people. He's reporting it this way. He says the FBI may have violated criminal statutes as well as its own strict internal procedures by using unverified information during the 2016 election to obtain a surveillance warrant on one-time Trump campaign aide Carter Page. This, according to Chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes. Nunes wrote in a letter to Attorney General Jeff Sessions that in this instance, it's clear that basic operating guidance was violated. Nunes cited the Domestic Investigations and Operations Guide, which was created by the Bureau and approved by the Justice Department, to say he believed the FBI violated procedures requiring verified and documented evidence in applications to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They did not do this. They did not vet this. They did not vet these. They did not file their own internal procedures. An October 2011 version of the operations guide states that that the accuracy of information contained within FISA applications is of the utmost importance. Only documented and verified information may be used to support FBI applications to the court. As we've been saying, the way the FISA court is set up, if somebody wants to abuse it, it's easy to do. It's the nature of a secret court. That's why you have to be very careful in the way you handle them. And it turns out, according to Nunes, the FBI not only violated their guidelines, he thinks they broke the law, the criminal law. Let's see where that goes. See you tomorrow.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.